Afro Verdict, brought to you by Sputnik Africa.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Afro Verdict, where we delve into the heart of Africa's dynamic narrative. I'm your host, Victor Anakin, and today we are turning our attention to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, exploring the perplexing question of why the West has been largely unresponsive to peace proposals put forward by the Global South. In the second part, we'll also analyze the benefits of Russia's humanitarian shipment of fertilizer to Nigeria. So back in June 2023, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa led a group of African heads of state to Ukraine to propose the African Peace Plan, a 10-point proposal for how the conflict should end. From the other side of the Atlantic, Brazil also proposed a vague settlement solution which insisted on an immediate ceasefire and diplomatic talks. As we see the conflict continuing, it is clear that neither the West nor Ukraine have bent an ear to the countries of the Global South. Despite the seemingly sound approach, Western powers led by the United States and its European allies have largely ignored these proposals. And this, of course, raises a critical question. Why is the West seemingly dismissing the peace initiative from South Africa and Brazil? In this episode, we will dissect the complex factors that may be driving the West's reluctance to embrace the proposals of these countries. We'll explore the underlying geopolitical tensions, the different perspectives on the conflict, and the potential repercussions of continuing to reject these peace efforts. So join us as we delve into this intriguing diplomatic conundrum and seek to understand the rationale behind the West's stance. We'll hear from Dr. Anna Baho, International Relations and Security Studies lecturer at Nkumba University, to gain a deeper understanding of the dynamics at play and the potential outcomes of this impasse. Then, moving on to more positive news, Russia has sent a shipment of fertilizer free of charge to Nigeria, and now the shipment is unloaded at the country's Ono port. To explore the benefits of this aid, we'll be joined by Professor Emmanuel Remy Ayede, academic, Department of Political Science at the University of Ibadan. Stay tuned for thought-provoking and insightful discussion on the West's response to South Africa and Brazil's peace proposals for the Ukrainian conflict and the pros of Russia's helping hand to Nigeria. Let's go. Dr. Abaho, welcome to the AfroVerdict podcast, and as always, thank you for joining me. So on Wednesday, the 31st of January, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov noted that the initiatives of Brazil and African countries led by South Africa on the settlement of the conflict in Ukraine are not even examined by the West during the meetings on Zelensky's peace formula. Why do you think is that so?
Probably it goes back to issues of power and who controls what within the international system. Yes, South Africa could be one of the leading African countries, particularly when it comes to political stability and economic progress. And so may Brazil from the south of America. But the West has a deliberate tendency of rejection and downplaying the contribution of the Global South to the extent that even the peace formula before the West seems, you know, so to speak, childish, as though it doesn't meet the expectations of the developed North, because in the first place, the peace formula does not favor the interests of the West. It's talking about withdrawal. It's talking about no ICC for Putin. It's talking about diplomacy. And probably the West would have wanted to use power to, you know, gain victory over Russia and bring it down completely, which would be an attainment of a mission that it wanted to realize 40 years back. But it seems the war is increasingly growing, you know, expensive, it's prolonged. It has taken a longer period than probably previously thought. And maybe the instrument through which the West thought it would win over Russia, the instrument here being Ukraine, has not performed as expected. And so the dismissal of the peace formula from the African countries by the Western world is a clear indication of how low African views are ranked within the global system.
Okay, then also Russia has not once mentioned that the West is not interested in the peace settlement of the Ukrainian conflict. If African initiatives were ignored, does it look like a confirmation of the statement?
I think the only settlement that the West is interested in is victory over Russia. Because for the West, peace is victory over socialism, peace is victory over, you know, USSR, peace is victory over Putin, peace is victory over Russia as a whole and its system. So depending on how one defines peace, but if you're talking about peace in terms of ceasefires and, you know, negotiations and diplomacy, probably that is not the kind of peace that the West would have wanted to see. So does the ignoring of the peace settlement plan by the African countries confirm that indeed the West doesn't want a peace settlement in Russia? Yes and no. Because the initiatives that have been advanced by the African countries do not match the strategies that had been laid by the Western world. And no, because the West is certainly feeding the weight of the war. So yes, they want peace, but they don't want peace in the way that the African countries are suggesting.
Minister Lavrov also said that such exclusion from these discussions reflect colonialism and imperialism. Do you agree with this statement? And what historical or structural factors could Lavrov be referring to?
Yes. I mean, right from the word go, the relationship between the West and the developing world has been one of domination, has been one of suppression, has been one of demeaning and dehumanizing. So I do not think that the West sees anything valuable coming from, one, the African people themselves, and later on the African leaders. I think that the Western world looks at African leaders as, you know, comedians on the international scene. It's kind of, you know, playing a game, you know, in a theater of the absurd. It's that comedy where you want to laugh, but you nonetheless have to hold back the laughter because the story is sad. So I think that when these the likes of USA, the likes of France, the likes of England look at what the proposals coming from the global South are, it's some way to say what contribution, after all, how much weight do you have on the international system, and so the historical rejection of the African continent and its peoples, and you know, Black people in the diaspora is simply making a clear return without holding back, to the extent that even in terms of beyond color, even the ideas suggested for purposes of global order, which is in the interest of everyone, if not at least for the majority, is still rejected. So yes, I agree to the statement that it is a reflection of colonialism and imperialism, because the West thinks liberalism, you know, liberalism in terms of imposing its own political values and political systems on the rest of the world is what matters in this world. And also imperialism, to the extent that the West does not think that anything bright, anything meaningful can come out of the developing world. So they still look at the developing world as it still needs to be civilized. It still needs to be cleaned. It still needs to be taught what is right from wrong and what is left from right. So yes, I agree with Lavrov.
Okay, you know, let's backtrack a bit. So what specific ideas has South Africa proposed regarding the Ukrainian conflict? And how do these ideas differ from the so-called Zelensky formula? And why might they be seen as unwelcome in the West?
South Africa, together with the other African countries, you can mention Egypt, you can mention Senegal. They have, well, for the biggest part, not brought out in its entire form the proposals, but majorly they are approaching the resolution of the conflict from a diplomatic angle. They're saying if you can let you know, Putin go free from the ICC and you take back those threats of arrest, they are saying if you can you know, have discussions, negotiate ceasefire. If you can have agreements signed and the conflict settled, basically, if you can approach this conflict with all other means short of war, then it would be possible. So, of course, Africa is in the middle of all this because for the biggest part of this conflict, African countries have tried to remain neutral, but they are also under pressure. Each of the camps wants to hear the views and which side African countries belong to. Yes, South Africa might be coming out as one of the lead African countries, but also as a big member of the BRICS. China has also given its view, yes, but for the African countries, literally when South Africa speaks, one can as well conclude that Africa has spoken, which is not the case, of course, but in terms of influence and reach and power and meaning at the international scene, South Africa does certainly command much more power on the African continent. So in light of the proposals that South Africa has made, they still are unwelcome, like I mentioned earlier, because you know, the West is looking at South Africa, like, what are you investing? What have you invested after all? How do we recover our investments in terms of finances, in terms of economy, in terms of manpower, in terms of logistics? So, and that's why I was saying that for the Western world, the only peace that matters is victory over Russia, because victory over Russia would mean they now have a leeway, they have an open space from which they can, you know, make recoveries of the investments into the war. And yet, when South Africa proposes a diplomatic approach to the conflict, it is simply saying, let go of what you have historically, what you have put in, and you know, we move on. Let's let the past go and look into the future, which the West may not be ready to do, maybe at least not now. But I think that the war is indeed draining the economies. It's hurting the political, stability, political decisions, which would then influence the economic decisions. Of course, the economy also influences the political stability. So if they have invested so much of money, if they have had to send tanks and all sorts of weapons, that says a lot about how much has been taken out of the economy in fighting ideological and political wars that sometimes surely don't make sense.
All right, you know, speaking of South Africa, we see that the country is gaining more and more weight on the international arena. As an example, the recent appeal to the International Court of Justice regarding Israel would do. Don't you think that this tendency is sort of disliked by the West?
I just hinted on it. Yes, it is. As you may be aware, when the African continent was joining the G70, the BRICS, the G20, not the BRICS, the G20, South Africa had already been a member of the G20. And so it took another about 54 countries to make the African continent to join the G20. So in light of question five, the recent appeal to the International Court of Justice regarding Israel, yes. And whether the West likes it or not, I think South Africa has indicated that it has the potential, it has the capacity, and it is ready to at least speak, if not for itself, then for the interests of the African countries. We have history is very clear with examples of abuse, of intervention. History is very clear with examples of West interfering in the internal affairs of the developing world, many times not even with meaningful suggestions or even policies. The policies clearly favor those who are intervening. And so I think that when South Africa gets up to speak about the evils that Israel is committing against Palestine, yes, it is to say that we understand that Palestine may have made the first attempt on Israel, But Palestine has now felt what it means to make a first attempt. And so let's be mindful of the humanitarian catastrophe. Let's be mindful of the need for peace. Let's be mindful of those who are disinterested in the war but have now become, you know, victims and are caught in the middle of this war. And so I think that South Africa is growing, and probably with it and through it, other countries could also have their voices heard. Already we have seen Egypt, we have seen Senegal, which are saying no to the deliberately sustained war approach of the West in Ukraine against Russia, or for what many people say, Russia against Ukraine.
All right, Dr. Anne, thanks for the insight. And finally, what steps could be taken to ensure that a wider range of perspectives are represented in discussions about the Ukrainian conflict? And how can this help to achieve a more sustainable peace?
I think we need to have a liberal approach here to the resolution of the resolving of this conflict, the Ukrainian-Russian conflict, but also many other conflicts that have now hit the global scene. Because to dismiss entirely the views coming from Africa is basically to take away 54 countries from the African continent and many more others that are coming from the global south. And yet majority of the people are in this developing world. And the effects of this war may not be direct, but they are felt in terms of economy, they are felt in terms of travel, in terms of migration, they are felt in terms of exchange of expertise and you know, support that would have come through for infrastructural development, for among others. So the approach that should be taken, the steps that could be taken, is first of all the need to realize that not only are Western countries, you know, not only are Western countries, the Western countries are not the only ones that feel the pinch of this conflict. They feel it and everyone else feels it. So for the good of everyone, we should look at something more common that takes into consideration the interests of all, whether directly involved or not, but also United Nations, which I understand will find it very difficult to implement, but United Nations needs to move in very fast and condemn the acts, really. Whether a country is supporting directly or indirectly, there should be condemnation of those who are supporting the conflicts around the world, especially when it is a bigger power against the other, or even when it is a formation of alliances for offensive purposes, as the case is Ukraine and USA against Russia, or Israel supported by USA against Palestine. I think it is wrong. Absolutely, we need the United Nations Security Council, which is going to be very tricky, because the countries which would have moved to have the UN Security Council move in are the very countries which are at the center. But we need to have global, and not global, regional efforts. The European Union needs to come in and say no, enough is enough. The African Union needs to move as a single voice. You may have seen that when we had the non-aligned movement meeting in Kampala, it wasn't even very clear on whether, you know, there were genocide crimes being committed in Palestine by Israel. It was vague, you know, it was just left there. And so if countries cannot condemn the acts on an individual basis, then the voices can come through at a regional level. I hope that.
For those of you who have just tuned in, welcome to the AfroVerdict podcast. I'm your host, Victor Anakin, and we are now jumping over to more positive news. Russia has sent a shipment of humanitarian aid in the form of fertilizer to Nigeria, and this shipment is now being unloaded at Nigeria's Ono port. That said, we are now jumping over to Professor Emmanuel Remy Ayede, academic at the Department of Political Science of the University of Ibadan, to get an expert's opinion on the benefits of this shipment. Professor Ayede, welcome to the AfroVerdict podcast. It's a pleasure to have you join me today. So recently, 34,000 tons of free Russian fertilizer has arrived in Nigeria and is being unloaded at the port of One as a part of the commitments Russia has made to several African countries. So what do you think is the significance of this shipment to Nigeria?
I think it has a great significance if you know that fertilizer has always been a huge problem in Nigeria. It's always at the front line of a discussion of food security, as well as trying to improve on the productivity of the agricultural sector. It's a big deal, even when the current president of the African Development Bank, Dr. Adesina, was the Minister of Agriculture in Nigeria, fertilizer was a major issue that they needed to address. Last year, the president promised the farmers, while meeting with the Farmers Association, that he was going to bring the price of fertilizer down by 50%. And in the hope that that would be a major boost to agriculture. So the deal with Russia has been advertised as a major intervention to help them realize that objective. So it's a big deal for the agricultural sector and also for the government in their need of bringing such inputs into farming in Nigeria.
Okay, Prof, could you perhaps elaborate a little bit more on how these fertilizers will help Nigerian agriculture and the people per se?
Yeah, you know, fertilizers are very important input into farming, especially in the northern part of Nigeria, where commercial farming is very high and a huge part of the not just the local economy, but also for the means of income and survival for ordinary people from the middle belt of Nigeria, which we describe as the food basket of Nigeria. That's where you have the concentration of for the production of Nigeria's staple foods. And you know that the agricultural production has reduced in those areas. Find that fertilizer will be a major boost to trying to fill some of the gap that has been created by the multiple conflicts that has gripped that part of the country. So there are a lot of challenges to agricultural production in that food basket area of Nigeria, because of the multiple conflict. We have the herdsmen farmers conflict, then we also have the problem of terrorism and banditry in those areas. So the impact of these factors on agriculture has been very great, and then Nigeria is seriously concerned about the issues of food security. So even getting any input at all into agricultural production in those areas are very vital. And you also know, probably a lot of people do, that local production of fertilizer has always depended on potash from Russia. And now you have this logistics coming from Russia. So it's a big deal for the government, and it will go far in their pledge to the Farmers Association, that they are going to bring down the price of fertilizer by 50%. So it's very important input to farmers.
Right, Prof. Thank you very much for that. Now, if we zoom out and go into a more global agenda, the collective West, if you could allow such a term, doesn't seem to appreciate the rapprochement and the intensification of relations between Africa and Russia. What is your explanation for this phenomenon?
Russia has not had very strong interventions or presence in African countries since the collapse of the end of the Cold War, the collapse of the Berlin Wall, as we say it, the place of Russia has actually been taken over by China, because you know, during the day of the Cold War, for the Soviet Union versus the West, especially led by the United States. But since the collapse of the Cold War, the West came and became the dominant force in many African countries, until China started making inroads. And you know, people tend to make a distinction between what China does and what the Western powers did in Africa. They talk about China's investment in infrastructure, and that people can see, and they think that that's a better kind of investment than the West giving us money that is swallowed up by corruption and politicians and government officials. And because of that, the visibility of China became very high in African countries. But of course, the intervention of China also came with huge debts, but at least people can see the infrastructures in terms of railway lines, in terms of airports, in terms of roads construction and so on, which are directly done by Chinese companies, and people can see that intervention. So the Chinese tend to loom larger than Russia in the post-Cold War period. So with the disillusionment with democracy, with the challenges that have come with the performance of politicians in after the recent wave of democratic, the spread of democracy across the continent, China has in fact become an alternative place to go when we talk about economic support or support by foreign powers. And what has happened now is that with the situation in Ukraine, Russia is beginning to spread its seek support within the continent, and that's why you see many of the coup guitars in West Africa, for instance, when they see that they have serious challenges with the West, especially the support of ECOWAS for democracy and the appeal to the West to support what ECOWAS does within the sub-region. You see that Russia is beginning to offer a succor to those coup plotters. And so it seems Russia is pushing forward, you know, to seek support of African countries in its intervention in Ukraine vis-a-vis the support that the Western world provides for Ukraine. So yes, this is also part of the initiative by Russia to begin to take a place, you know, in the power play going on within the African continent. And you know, the coup plotters have embraced Russia, and it's also a good thing for Russia that they can also offer some kind of aid or relief to African countries who are in their need of increasing or reducing food insecurity.
All right, Professor Ayede, thank you very much for that. Now, lastly, if we still speak about the grain, last year, Russia pledged 200,000 tons of grain free of charge to be delivered to several African countries. And during the last month, the grain has already arrived in Eritrea, Somalia, Burkina Faso. It's on its way to Zimbabwe. How do you estimate this particular initiative?
Well, I think it's a welcome initiative because poverty is high in many countries in Africa. In fact, in Nigeria, many factors have accounted for the deepening of poverty, especially food. The fiscal crisis that we are going through now has resulted in the devaluation of our currency, and the importation has become extremely unaffordable. So I think it's been reported in the media as a major intervention to reduce inflation as far as grain, food inflation as far as grain is concerned. And the governments, especially governments who are pressed hard, you know, to do something about the deepening poverty among the large population, which actually embrace such gestures and consider it a major help. What it then means is that it's likely to attract more sympathy to Russia as a country that cares about poverty and hunger in Africa.
Thank you for joining AfroVerdict from Sputnik Africa, everyone. I hope you found today's episode interesting. And now that you have some food for thought, be my guest to head over to the Sputnik Africa Telegram channel, TikTok account, and other socials to stay updated on the topics we've discussed today. To listen to previous podcast episodes, check them out on popular podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Deezer, Pocket Cast, AfriPods, CastBox, of course, Podcast Addict. That's that for today, everyone. This is your host, Victor Anakin, signing off. I'll see you next time.
AfroVerdict, brought to you by Sputnik Africa.